This podcast may contain language that's not appropriate for all listeners. Listener discretion is advised. Today we're going over Earth Girls Are Easy.
Woo!
So if you haven't seen it and you don't want us to ruin it for you, you might want to pass on this one and we'll catch you next time.
Hey, gentle listeners.
And easy Earth Girls. I'm just kidding. Are you ready
for one dry kiss? Welcome to One Dry Kiss, our cussy, irreverent love letter to rom-coms, where in the month of May, we are doing this movie. Oh, fuck. What is it?
This movie may make you say, what the fuck?
There you go. This movie may make you say, what the fuck? Thank you, Tamara, for your brain hamster. Mine is currently off the wheel. I am sorry.
Mm-hmm.
I am here with my lovely co-host, the person who fortunately is the other half of my brain, Miss Tamara Cosio. Probably the better half of my brain, quite honestly.
And I am here with the whiplock to my Zeebo, Corinne Edding.
You did not. You did not. Just fucking call me a whiplock?
A big horny alien, folks. A big red horny alien.
No!
That's Corinne.
There's three different aliens to choose from. You chose the adorable one. Then there's the hunky one. And you give me the fucking, like, dumbass, like, boobies one. Come on!
I'm sorry. Okay, fine. You could be Mac.
Thank
you. Mac to my Zeebo. There, see, that wouldn't have elicited the response that we just got, which was very entertaining. I am so sorry. Not sorry. So we need to say it again. We are doing Earth Girls Are Easy.
Yes.
If you haven't seen this movie, you're in for a banana sauce show because it is a wild fucking ride. But it's actually pretty nice because there are a lot of big name actors right at the start of their blow up career,
yes,
that are in this movie together.
Yes.
So it was very fun seeing that.
Yeah. Also, I was like, I'd seen Earth Girls Are Easy before and I knew what I was getting into, but I actually didn't know what I was getting into because aside from the fact that I didn't realize it was a musical and what the hell, why didn't I realize it was a musical? Up to a certain point, I was like, yeah, this is what I was expecting. And then it just got more and more and more banana-sa. And I was like, wait, what? What? Okay, I was watching a fun comedy romance up until this point, and suddenly, what the fuck is going on here?
Yeah, it's a mashup of a bunch of crazy things that just happened to be in the same movie. I felt the same way. I did not care for this movie when I first saw it way back in the day. It was very much well after it was released.
Mm-hmm.
So I want to say like 10 years or more at least.
Yeah.
After it was released, I saw it and I was like, huh.
I actually really enjoyed it the first time I saw it. And it was 10 years or more after it was released. It was like high school or maybe early, college. And I was like, oh my gosh, this is actually really quite good. I now have a slightly different opinion on it, but I still like had a great time.
That's crazy because I'm the opposite. When I watched it 10 years after, I said again, huh. And then now I watch it and I'm like, okay, I have a better appreciation for how kitsch it is. Like,
yeah.
It's fun. It's nothing you should take seriously. And I think when I watched it, if it was about 10 years and I was still in my grunge phase, I'd just be like, this is stupid. I'm going to go sit in my flannel shirt and my cutoff jeans and listen to wailing, warbling, sad music. I don't need any joy in my life. This movie has too much of it.
Yes. Too many bright colors.
Oh my God, that's why Corinne loved it. Oh yes, my God, ding, yes. Ding, 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 ding. We have a winner. I'm like, I'm just going to like desaturate it and take all the color out and then I could truly appreciate it for what it is.
I see a red door and I want to paint it black.
That's my motto.
I see a black door and I want to paint it rainbows.
So imagine us at said door, both trying our damnedest to like paint it before the other. So we got like half rainbow, half black, pushing each other out of the way.
Ultimately, we get it just like this kind of shit brown door.
Yeah.
We're like, neither of us are happy.
It's a shit show, just like us. Makes perfect sense.
I have to share with you about, and I already did share with you, but I have to share with the gentle listeners.
Mm-hmm.
There's this book I've been listening to, and I feel seen by it in ways that I've never been seen by anything. And it completes me in a way that I didn't think was possible. And the book is an autobiography, and it's called Sociopath, a Memoir. And yeah. by Patrick, I don't know how to pronounce her last name, Gagné or something like that. But, oh, man, I will say that I am not a sociopath, will not pretend to be one. However, a lot of her different behaviors or whatever, I was like, oh, I totally see that. I see you. I understand. And she's having like this argument about her motivations or whatever with her boyfriend. And he'll be like, are you doing it because of this? And I'll be like, no, she was doing it because of this, this, and this. And then she like pipes up and she's like, I was doing it because of this, this, and this. And I was like, see? I see you, Patrick. I see you. And you see me, but you don't because I'm just listening to your audiobook and I also am not a sociopath. Hi. So anyways,
I also started listening to that book per your recommendation. Uh-huh. And I just got to the point where she was in Florida and she strangled the cat. The cat didn't die.
Yeah, no, I was going to say, like, let's complete that sentence.
Yes. The cat did not die. She just squeezed it a little bit hard and yeah. then let it go. But it's so interesting too to hear from the sociopathic point of view, like why she does what she does. Mm-hmm. And it's almost like getting a glimpse into like a serial killer or a criminal that just like has no regrets. But she's not that. She's yeah. like working really hard to be a normal person in society. But she describes what goes on internally. And it is very fascinating. Kind of up until this point, I was like, oh, girl, yeah, mm-hmm, sure. That's fine. That's totally fine. That's like whatever. And then she strangled the cat. And I'm like, oh,
yeah.
Oh, no. That's like a ding, 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 ding. Usually they say like, oh, and if you're cruel to animals, that's like a big, huge red flag that you've got issues.
Yeah. And gentle listeners, I have never hurt animals, nor was I delighted by that section of the book. I wasn't like, that's me.
They don't call me Cat Killer Corinne for nothing. I'm just kidding.
I take care of cats. I get paid to. I do not hurt them. I think a lot of it has to do with how I think that people who are maybe like a little autistic, maybe a little dissociated, maybe a little socially different in some ways, it will really resonate with them. Not the cat killing part. Cat strangling part. But just like it took me until like basically now to halfway be able to figure out people and what they're doing and their motivations and how I should be in relationship to them.
Mm-hmm.
Because I didn't understand it, and it took me a really long time. And very similar to her, I would do a lot of like watching of people to try and figure it out. I watched a lot of reality shows.
Oh, don't do that, Corinne. And then I stole her boyfriend, and when she confronted me, I slapped her in the face because the reality show told me to.
Real World was very useful to me, and also more currently Love Island has been very useful to me. So yeah, In explaining some human dynamics as well. So yes, there's so much of like when she talks about like going out at night and doing these different things. And I was like, I'm like, yes, that's exactly how I feel. And that's exactly what's going on. And yeah, it was, except I have feelings. So yeah, love it. Love that book.
So reminds me of a song that Larry played for me when we first got together. It was a country song. Trying to find the name of it.
I am human and I need to be let on just like everybody else does.
No.
Hey. I thought you would appreciate my country version of
is that what that was? Okay. No, it was called Human, but basically like this guy is like, I'm still trying to learn how to be human. Be patient with me. And I was like, oh, played that song pretty early on. Now I'm a little nervous.
You're taking notes. You're like, oh, check. Okay, I see that there. Check. Oh, okay. Yes. Check. Oh, I need to be patient there too. Okay. Yeah, it's all playing out. Thank you for the handbook, Larry?
I have questions about chapter 7, page 22.
I think we're all sort of like that in some regards, you know.
Speaking of sociopaths, Corinne, I do think that Ted in this movie was kind of a little sociopath.
Oh, yeah. Ew.
Yes.
Ted. Ted. Fuck off, Ted. That's what I have to say to Ted.
We're going to have no Ted talks about you.
And gentle listeners, if you ever decide to watch this movie, there are two different grand pianos with candelabras on them in this movie. So one I think is a vehicle.
This movie. Whoever did the set styling is, wow.
Uh-huh.
Wow.
Yeah. Very of the time in a really of the time kind of way. Yes.
Mm-hmm. And a little out of the time. And then back in the time, then out of the time again, then dipping the toes in the time, and then yanking your foot right out of the time.
Because it's like the future.
Yeah, future. Heavy air quotes.
So speaking of the future, Tamara, did you, with all your tenacity, tippy type a terrific to synopsis?
Mm-hmm. Which is exactly what you wrote. So yes, Corinne, yes, I did. Did all of that. All of the things. And here it is. Synopsis. Val, played by Gina Davis, is a manicurist in Los Angeles with her own mad flavor, who is happily engaged to Ted, until she catches him cheating with his coworker. She breaks up with him immediately. Well, kind of. But is not alone for long, because the very next day, a trio of horny aliens crash land in her swimming pool. You heard that right, folks. A trio of horny aliens crash in her swimming pool. There is Mac, played by Jeff Goldblum, Whiplock, played by Jim Carrey, and Zeebo, played by Damon Wayans.
So practically a documentary.
Sure, Corinne. Sure. Val must simultaneously help them get back to their planet, make them blend in with the human race, and gird her loins against their sensual wiles, ooh, like tongues that would put Gene Simmons to shame and special rainbow erotic love touches.
Yes!
Will Val help her new friends get back home and, more importantly, convince them that Earth girls aren't easy? Find out with us as we head back to Los Angeles, specifically the Valley, and fly our freak flags because Earth girls are easy. Views about the Earth girls being promiscuous, aka easy, or any other derogatory point of view about sexuality is not supported or upheld by ODK. You want to shag a 6-foot furry blue alien, you do you, boo, as long as both parties are consensual.
Amen. Excellent disclaimer. I appreciate that. Thank you.
No problem. Mm-hmm. I felt that strongly. And Corinne, can you let us know if the Earth girls are easy?
Oh, I'll tell you, because I just went out on a date the other night and poof, boy.
Close, was he an alien?
Flying off.
Oh, see, I thought the story was going to go in a different direction.
You should have seen his tongue. No, just kidding. I did go out on a date the other day, and he did have a tongue that went, and I was like, no.
Oh, did he do that on the date?
We kissed. And,
oh, okay.
You know, kissing with tongue, totally fine. And then he just like revved up the motor on his tongue and went quintuple time. And I was like, what the fuck are you doing? Also, on his profile, it said that he was a non-smoker. And I will tell you, he was not a non-smoker.
Oh, why? Why you lie about that?
Which, if you know what you're getting into, that's one thing. But if you don't know what you're getting into and you go in, it's just a big turnoff. Gotta say.
See, I was picturing him just like sitting across from you at the restaurant and being like, hey, Corinne. Like that was his come hither move. I mean, the fact that you're kissing and you knew that he had a tongue, quite a tongue, a very fast tongue, but I was picturing that completely different. You kissing a la-la-la-la alien.
Oh, you should have seen the way he grabbed ice cubes from his cup.
Was it like Whiplock?
Yeah, no, I'm just kidding. Oh,
tell us all about it, Corinne.
No, I was like, okay, well, I have to work on the podcast, so I'm going to go. And I'm like, and I know you have to get up early for work. Like, he gets to work at like 6 in the morning. Yeah. And he's like, well, I wouldn't mind if we went back to your place. And I was like, gotta work on the podcast. Bye. That can happen. But yes, I will tell you, if Earth girls are easy, But we're starting off with the first segment, which I call Aliens or Horn Dogs.
Indeed.
A spaceship that looks like an old school Studebaker with friends had a baby with an Astrovan flies through the galaxy with its three occupants. Mac, who is furry and blue and resting in a sleeping chamber. Zeebo, who is furry, a yellow orange and obsessed with food. And Whiplock, who is furry and red and is complaining as he tries to get a large, clear sphere to do something. They're all aliens. And Whiplock complains in his native language. But I'm translating it because I'm cool like that. Also, because I can read subtitles. It'll be fun, they said. You'll have so many adventures, they said. Well, I'm saying I need a woman, and I need one now. He slams his hand down on the clear beach ball-sized sphere that is sitting on a podium. Suddenly, it comes to life, projecting a 3D image of a sexy lady alien, which actually pretty good for the time. This had some somewhat reasonable special effects in it, I actually thought.
Yes, it did. I agree.
And I also really liked, even though they looked like furry people, I really liked their alien looks as well. And the song, Earth Girls Are Easy, comes on, spitting such touching lyrics as, I've had a lot of girls all over the galaxy, but Earth Girls are the ones for me. Earth Girls are easy. Earth Girls, so easy. A opening animated sequence comes on that has a lot of naked boobs in it. And I would like to give a shout out to Julie Brown, who was one of the writers on this movie. And I believe wrote a lot of the songs in this movie as well.
She's got a knack for it. I can't tell you how many times I had to stop myself from calling her Downtown Julie Brown. Because she wasn't Downtown Julie Brown.
Yes.
Julie Brown was the redhead in this movie. Downtown Julie Brown was an MTV VJ back in the day.
Yes.
Both named Julie Brown.
Yes.
But one was from downtown and the other one wasn't.
Yes. And I think Downtown Julie Brown became Downtown Julie Brown because of the comedian Julie Brown.
Yeah. It has a nice ring to it because I kept wanting to call her Downtown Julie Brown, even though it was actually the wrong Julie Brown.
Seriously, me too.
But that's neither here nor there. Then we find the camera panning onto Los Angeles and a sweet little ranch-style house. The camera peers through the window. It's nighttime and a woman is sleeping in bed with a wedding veil over her head. Is she dead? Is this her wedding night and her husband passed out on her? So many questions, but they're swiftly answered when a hunky man walks into the room. The woman's cat responds by hissing at him. He says cautiously, "Honey, I'm home." She springs up awake and whips the veil off her head, then tries to hide it, and the dress laying next to her saying quickly, "Wait, Ted! It's bad luck if you see the dress before the wedding!" Ted walks past her and into the adjoining bathroom, saying over his shoulder, "That's just a superstition. It'll be fine." He looks at himself in the mirror, flexes his bicep as he blows into his thumb, which gives the illusion that he's inflating his muscles.
Ooh,
so sexy!
Sexy!
That was actually kind of funny. And I'm like, that's something I would do and be like, look at what I can do. Look. She calls out, "Well, we did meet on Friday the 13th. And just look at how good things are between us." She pauses then asks, "So what happened? You said you'd be home at 11? He says, "Sorry, I'm home so late, Val. You know how those surgeries can be." He spots a hickey on his neck and quickly uses some of her cover-up stick to obscure it.
Surgeries, huh?
Surgeries. Uh-huh. He's got to do some serious probing on his patients whom you don't even know. Meanwhile, she's swiftly popping a birth control pill and judging herself so she can properly entice her rock-solid man. He climbs into bed and she tries getting frisky with him, but he rejects her. "I'm sorry, babe. I've got an early morning surgery. I promise we'll do it tomorrow."
Mm-hmm.
Val is a bit frustrated and explains, "But I'm at the cuticle convention tomorrow through Monday." Ted resists the urge to do a fist pump like Tanya Harding when she landed her triple axel. Ha ha. Call back, Corinne.
Yeah.
Good job. And instead promises, "Well, Monday, then we'll do it Monday." Val suggests that they get a miracle pyramid that you can hang over your bed that's supposed to increase sexual energy. But we all know that he has plenty of sexual energy. He's just not saving it for her.
Ooh. Fucking Ted. No, Ted is fucking
Ted.
Jesus Christ.
Mm-hmm. Literally.
Mm-hmm. What an asshole. And I love how he totally gaslights her, like, you're oversexed, lady. I'm just trying to work hard over here. We can do the bed dance when you come back from your retreat on Monday. Fuck off, Ted. The next day, before Val heads out of town, she has to go to work at the salon, which I specifically put the name of in here because I thought Tamara would really appreciate it because she loves the wordplay.
Delightful. It's so delightful.
You want to say what it is? You want to say what it is?
It's curl up and die, and die spelled D-U-I-E. Like a salon called Curl Up and Die. I can't even. I can't.
Oh, so, yes, I actually rewound to get the title of the salon so I could put it in just for you because I love you.
I didn't have to rewind it. I just saw it flash for a second. I'm like, curl up and die. Oh, that's genius.
I was like, curl up and die. Tam's going to love that. And then I forgot what it was 2 seconds later. She parks really poorly in her baby blue classic Mustang convertible, pulls out a small hairdryer to quickly finish drying off the super cute nail design she did on her nails, orange and blue wavy stripes, and gets out of her car. But that's when the record kind of scratches because we see her outfit, and it is special.
Not in the good way.
She is wearing a white short-sleeved shirt. That doesn't sound bad. Tucked into a rust-colored pair of shorts, and that's okay. But no outfit would be complete without some color-blocked suspenders and...
Yeah, keep going. Push through, Corinne. Push through.
She's wearing a straw hat, but the top of it is out, and she's got her hair in a cascade of Hallmark curls coming out of the top of it like a fucking fountain or something.
Those were not Hallmark curls. Those curls would have put Hallmark curls to shame.
No, they were like, they were much smaller than Hallmark curls were. There were a lot of them.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. It was so
bad.
They
were straight ringlets.
Oh.
They were like, ringlets.
I was like, Shirley Temple wants her curls back. Except Shirley Temple's curls were like beach waves in comparison.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. This was an anomaly because I'm like, usually hairstylists have some pretty cool like flavor and flair. And this one was like, oh, honey. Wow. Wow.
Well, she does nails. She's not a hairstylist.
Okay, a nail stylist then. Uh-huh. Still, somebody that works in a salon, period.
Yeah.
People that tend to make other people look good do seem to have a sense of fashion and style themselves. Not Val.
No. She went loud and plowed. She went loud and proud, and it was in the wrong direction. But if you ever want to dress up as that for Halloween, I will love it. J'adore. Just FYI.
You have to dress up like somebody from Earth Girls Are Easy too, then, so my outfit makes sense.
Absolutely. Just call me Mac. Bet you can't wait to see my six-pack abs.
No.
If you dressed up as Val with the fountain of curls coming out of your straw hat, I would be Julie Brown, and I would have big, voluminous hair, and we would be very matchy-matchy. Yes. So, while Val prepares her nail station, Candy, who is played by Julie Brown, comes over offering her Sanka. Yes, please. Who doesn't want some Sanka? What Sanka? We don't really know. It might be instant coffee. It might just be some kind of brown flavored-ish water.
I think it was a poor man's Folgers back in the day.
Uh-huh. And when Val mentions that Ted and her haven't had sex in a couple of weeks, Candy drops the cup of Sanka in shock. Shock, I say. How can a person live without sex for 2 weeks? I can tell you how a person can live without sex for 2 weeks. And I'm fine. I am totally fine. Candy explains to Val, Ted is obviously a victim of PMS. Premarital stress. What you need is a makeover. You can become a whole new woman to him. I think you should go blonde, ditch the nail conference, and surprise Ted tonight with your new Luke. And so it's obvious that there should be a musical number that includes dancing twins of, in spandex, lyrics like, "It's time for you to see the root of all your problems is you don't look like me," while everybody dances around and Val's hair gets wrapped in foil, dyed blonde, her body gets waxed, including two perfect half-dollar sized circles cut out of her modesty towel so her nipples could be waxed. And when I saw this back in the day, I was like, what's going on there? Rewind, because it's on a VHS tape, you know.
Yeah.
Not the clearest thing, not the easiest thing to see. Watching it on streaming, all very clear, all very evident. Watching it on a VHS, not so clear, not so evident, and also tiny TV screen. And so I'm like, what? Rewind. What? Rewind. What? Slow motion. Oh, ouch.
Oh, my goodness. I do have to say, too, that this salon scene was a better representation of the actual people you would see in Los Angeles versus the movie we did a couple of weeks ago that was Legally Blonde.
Oh, I love your vitriol for Legally Blonde. It's so rational.
I was going to say, there was different nationalities, there was different body sizes, there was a gay hairstylist there, I'm sure. And then I'm like, that's the San Fernando Valley I know. Yes. Yes. Ugh. Oh, my goodness.
So the tatas get waxed. I personally, every once in a while, just take a little razor and I go, zoop, and done. But yes.
Oh, my God.
What?
You just got me thinking, I don't think I've ever had a nipple hair.
Oh,
although my girls do tend to look down, so maybe they're just hiding and I just don't know.
You just need to like point them up and be like, whoop, what's going on there? It's not like, what is it? It's not like I have Encino Man tatas or, you know, Zeebo tatas. It's just, there's like a hair or two there. So you're like Brandy, no hair, and I'm like Kristen, a little hair going on there. Yes.
I lucked out, actually. Like, I can go months without shaving my legs. And although I do have, like, hair on my legs, it's like fine baby hair that you can see if you look really, really close. Same with my arms. That would be really tragic if my nipples were like, guess where all your hair is? Right here.
It's like two, like, vajays.
Just little pube patches right on my nips. That's awesome. That's real, real attractive.
Oh, God.
I'm so glad because I don't think I'd wax them. I don't think I'd be able to pluck them. I would probably just nair them and then, oh. But you know what? I don't even have to think about that. Why are we having this conversation?
This is a full-service salon that ultimately turns Val into a blonde bombshell. And fortunately, her unfortunate ringlets are gone.
Thank God.
I think Candy was just looking for an excuse to get rid of the ringlets, and she just didn't want to say it to her friend.
Same thing. She's like, you know what you need? A makeover. Yeah. Ted's not paying attention to you. Let me just put my hands on your hair for a second. Mm-hmm. Because I was going to say, like, that's not something a good friend would do. Oh, your fiance doesn't like you? Let's completely change everything about you and see if that works. I was like, that's not a good look, Julie Brown. But then now that you say the ringlets, I think you're onto something.
Yes.
Val goes home. She's got her fabulous blonde bob that's not in ringlets. She's wearing sexy lingerie and she's practicing talking sultrily to imaginary Ted while she waits for him to come home. She says breathily, oh no, Ted, I couldn't do that. What are you doing? Stop. No. Then double checks her book on how to allure a man. Champagne? Check. Sexy lingerie? Check. And I don't know if you noticed this, Corinne, but one of the checks was erotic oil. Did you happen to notice what her erotic oil was?
What was her erotic oil?
It was a full-size bottle of Wesson vegetable oil.
Says erotic like fried chicken, you know.
I was like, where exactly are you going to put that or what are you going to do with it? I'm confused and a little afraid. Oh, and she can't forget to sprinkle some perfume on a light bulb to spread her essence around the room.
Mm-hmm.
Val, thinking this is a good idea, picks up a bottle of perfume, and instead of spritzing it on the table lamp, she dumps the entire bottle on the light bulb, causing it to pop, and the table lamp to catch fire.
Mm-hmm.
She quickly uses her can of whipped cream to extinguish it and then hears Ted's key in the lock. She's not ready. She wants things to be hot, but not set your living room on fire hot. That's not the sexy mood she's going for.
No.
So she quickly grabs the table lamp and ducks into the closet, hoping to do a sexy reset after hiding the accidental arson evidence. Ted comes into the house with a hot blonde. What? Val only hears murmurs and giggles to herself at how surprised her fiancé is going to be. The hot blonde has no idea Ted's engaged, and Ted has no idea that Val is in the closet. He quickly ducks into the bedroom, trying to conceal any trace of his fiancé. He sweeps Val's jewelry and makeup into drawers and shoves her toiletries in the toilet. Just because they're called toiletries, Ted, that doesn't mean that's where they go.
Like, it was a crap ton of stuff that he threw in the toilet. And I'm like,
I was going to
okay, secrets. Hey, if you're going to go over to somebody's house to do the bed dance, what's one of the things that you do? You say, can I use the bathroom?
Mm-hmm.
And you, like, pee because you want to have everything all... You don't want to be needing to go to the bathroom in the middle of the bed dance.
I'm sorry, hot blonde, you can't because Val's box of tampons and a couple of pairs of pantyhose are already in there floating around the bowl.
Along with some lipstick, some blush, like a curling iron because those ringlets didn't just get there on their own.
I was like, this fucker, oh my God, I'd be so pissed. God. Anyways. Meanwhile, the blonde bombshell's looking around the living room. She sees the champagne and the book on attracting men, and then wanders into the hallway and bumps into a cactus. She lets out a yelp, and Val, who thinks the squeal came from Ted, takes this moment to pounce. The two blondes tangle up, tumbling together on the floor, and when Val realizes the blonde bombshell's not Ted, she innocently apologizes. Oh my goodness, I'm so sorry. I had no idea that Ted was going to bring a guest over. Just then, Ted comes out of the bedroom in only his boxers and a swinging stethoscope. He announces, "Who's ready for Dr. Love?" He sees his original blonde bombshell and the surprise extra blonde and gets very excited about the menage a trois until the second blonde turns around and it's Val! His stethoscope drops limply between his legs, much like his very hard hopes for the evening, which have also gone limp. The OG blonde bombshell gets the fuck out of there because she wants no part in this kink or drama.
Mm-hmm.
Once she's gone, Ted tries to appease Val, but she is understandably pissed and throws truffles at him, exclaiming, "If you wanted to have sex, why didn't you have it with me?" She douses him in champagne and kicks him out of the house, throwing his keys after him. When he starts to drive away, she suddenly has regrets for her hasty decision and tries calling after him, but it's too late. Thank goodness.
Thank goodness. So I'm so glad that fucking Ted got the fuck out of Dodge because I was like, Val, no, don't go into that dark night. Don't. I know you kind of want him back, but no, girl, no.
Yeah, just think about what just happened.
You wasted perfectly good truffles on that man, Val. Come on.
And champagne. And wait till you see what's in your toilet.
Oh, I wish that they'd like had that moment where she opens the toilet and is like,
yeah.
Or they should have had one of the aliens lift up the toilet and be like, oh, let's eat this.
And be like, oh, human shit looks really weird.
Next, we're treated to another musical number, which is obviously not sung by Val / Gina Davis, about how her heart has been broken as she goes around smashing his stuff. Well, she's singing about how her heart has been broken, but while she's singing, she's going around smashing his stuff. And I'm guessing that she falls asleep crying in a pile of his clothes, like smelling them because she's like, I'm gonna miss him. It smells like him.
Oh, gosh.
The next day, she calls up Candy. Candy. And lets her know what happened. And then goes to lay out in the backyard to soak up some sun poolside. And if you're wondering why I haven't been singing any of the songs in this, it's because none of them are recognizable to me except for one, because they're all original songs.
Yes.
And so I just don't remember the melody at all. And also that whole Val singing about her heartbreak song was just kind of boring. Anyways.
Depressing. Boring and depressing.
Yeah. Meanwhile, in space, Mac is still sleeping. Oh, man, after my own heart. I mean, an alien after my own heart. And Whiplock and Zeebo are fighting over the TV. It has picked up a broadcast from a neighboring planet. That planet is Earth. And the screen is filled with babes in bikinis. But then they lose their connection. So they use their telescope to see if there's any neighboring life. And lo and behold, there's Earth. And when Zeebo zooms in, he gets an eyeful of Val in her bikini. Awooga, awooga. But this isn't foreshadowing awoogas. This is just like, wow, I think she's hot. But Whiplock wants to see. Gosh darn it. No, Zeebo wants to see. No, Whiplock. A fight breaks out between the two of them. And they ultimately, ensues. Thank you. That's what I meant. Thanks, word check. Between the two of them. And they ultimately knock some stuff on the control console, sending their spaceship reeling through the air. This wakes up Mac, who manages to regain control of the ship. But by that time, they're already in Earth's atmosphere and they end up landing in Val's pool with a splash. Val, who has been relaxing in her chaise lounge, is suddenly splashed with water and appalled to see a giant hair dryer in her pool.
It is not a hair dryer, or else everybody'd be electrocuted.
Yes. But she calls it that.
Yeah.
However, she somehow thinks this is some delusion that has been created due to her utter despair around her fiancé cheating on her. Thinking she's in some kind of a fugue state, she decides, I'll just dive into the pool and swim through the giant hairdryer in the pool. No problem, as it's obviously a figment of my imagination, right? Right?
Wrong.
So she dives in and swims directly into the spaceship, knocking her damn head on the side of the ship and knocking her own damn self out. I'm just going to use knocking all over the place. Knocking her own damn self out.
Val had a pretty sweet house and a pretty sweet pool before there was an alien ship in it.
It's the perfect, like, cute little one or two person house. Mm-hmm. The kind of house that one of us would want to live in. You more than me, but still, one of us would want to live in.
And absolutely, and nothing we can afford in this day and age.
Oh, fuck no.
It's probably an $860,000 house now.
Although I am watching this Texas remodel show. The host was on Survivor at one point. She's very skinny, very tall, and has very long hair. And these people are like, I want my house fixed. And I'm giving you the budget of $150,000 to $200,000. And she'll be like, I know that you could buy a house for that amount of money, but instead, we are going to remodel the problems with your house. And I'm like, $150,000 to $200,000, you buy a house for that kind of money? Excuse me? Excuse me?
Is this show from 10 years ago? Maybe?
No, it's not. Oh. It's a current show. Sucks. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Anywho.
So she's delusional is what you're saying.
I was like, I've looked in some other markets and I was like, I mean, you might be able to buy some broke down palace in the Midwest for that amount of money, but it's going to not be a cute look. Mm-hmm. Of course, gentle listeners, we're all going to get barraged with emails like, you live in California, you dumb fucks, like out in X place, you can get a beautiful house for $150,000. Please let us know.
We're in the market for a new house. So yeah, if that is the case, please let us know. Mac sees the strange hairless woman unconscious in the water and quickly beams himself outside, grabs Val and brings her back into the spaceship. Which, apropos of nothing, they have to shrink to get into because they're like normal-sized humans, but apparently the ship is a downsized, like, smaller version that they have to shrink themselves into, which I was like, is that for fuel economy or what's the story on that?
It's because they couldn't get the scale size spaceship into a regular swimming pool, the tiny swimming pool in her backyard. That's why.
Gotcha. Yeah. Gotcha. Okay. Makes sense now. Uh-huh. Thank you. He lays her down and sets about trying to resuscitate her by giving her big, juicy forehead kisses.
Oh, forehead kisses, huh?
So that's what they're for. Obviously, it's not anything sexual. It's just to resuscitate people, which means they should not be given as a sign of
Larry.
Love.
Do you hear that, Larry?
No, don't encourage him. Don't encourage him. I told you what he did last time. He's like, oh, you don't like forehead kisses? I like giving forehead kisses. And look at my lips are right here, right next to your forehead. Whiplock, horn dog that he is, tries feeling her up, and Zeebo checks out her feet, postulating that she has a fungus when he sees her painted red toes with white dots on them. Val comes to, wraps her arms around Mac, and says dreamily, Teddy bear, you're back! As she pets Mac's blue fur, she realizes her teddy bear is way furrier than normal. Her eyes flash open and she screams! The colorful trio scream back at her! She springs off the table, looks around the room, and quickly assesses the situation. Where am I? I'm in a spaceship? Oh, fuck, this is not what I needed right now. She addresses the furry threesome, stating, okay, you guys are just going to do some experiments on me and then let me go, right? The threesome imitates, right? She cautiously backs away with the aliens closely following behind. When they have her surrounded, she clenches up, squinching her eyes shut, bracing for pain. And Zeebo yells in his native tongue, which means she's going to explode. Zeebo and Whiplock duck, trying to protect themselves from the Val explosion, but Mac is much more centered. Guys, he says to them in alien, she's just scared. Which sounds like what, Corinne? Come on, give it a try. Say it in alien. Bite your tongue. I'm just kidding.
I actually just said something really dirty to her. Sorry, gentle listeners. Didn't mean to make you blush.
When Val realizes that she's not going to be the victim of an alien autopsy, she frantically searches for an exit, saying almost apologetically, I don't know why you bothered to take me. There are so much more valuable people like Nancy Reagan that you could have taken. They don't seem to understand her, but she continues trying to reason with them anyways. You know, you don't have to worry about me. You can just let me go. I know how to keep a secret. Ask my cousin Debbie. She got her boobs done and I never told anyone. She pauses a beat, then realizes what she just did. Damn it! I just told you and you're aliens! Which I think is kind of okay because they're the safe space. Aliens should be a safe space to tell about your sister's or your friend's plastic surgery.
Exactly. I agree.
Ultimately, the aliens introduce themselves. Zeebo, and then Whiplock with a hip thrust, and then their leader, Blue, Maklar Ziblik Flurglinglerfler. Val offers, how about I just call you Mac?
Wait, can you say his full name again, please?
I just said phonetically what you put here.
Yeah.
Maklar Ziblik Flurglinglerfler.
Thank you.
You're welcome. You're turning a nice shade of red. You're turning a Whiplock shade of red.
Oh, I am turning a Whiplock shade of red. Okay, that is the only thing me and Whiplock have in common is the red.
She introduces herself as Val, and I wonder if it's short for Valley Girl since she's from the Valley. She looks out the window, realizes that she's still in her pool, and pulls a nearby lever, hoping it's an escape hatch. Instead, it lets a shower of water in. Once the aliens plug the leak she created, she apologizes, offers to drain her pool so their spaceship can dry out, and invites them to her house for lunch. She thinks they understand, and well, they understand enough because next we know the foursome is beaming to the outside of the ship and going into Val's house. I have to say, if I was in Val's situation, I don't think I would be super intimidated by this trio of aliens because the inside of their spaceship looked like something you would find at Chuck E. Cheese.
Yeah, it definitely, I was expecting kind of a claw machine thing to happen in there for sure.
Yeah. It's like yellows and reds and big plasticky toy looking things. And I'm just like, huh. Like you can hold a kid's birthday party in that thing just fine.
It's got the bounce house floor in it. It's perfect. Val Michelle ushers them inside, saying that they just need to play it cool because they look like Wookiees or werewolves or something. She tries feeding them, but is very unsuccessful as they eat a couple of Ted's tropical fish, stuff unpeeled raw eggs in their mouths, and drink lava lamp fluid.
Mm-mm.
I know. Yum. Meanwhile, Valerie places a call to the pool guy, and he comes over right quick to drain it. When he steps into the backyard, he sees Val hanging out in the middle of her pool, sitting on a couple of towels that she placed over the spaceship. He asks, "Whoa, what are you sitting on? Some kind of boogie board?" Val casually puts down her magazine and says nonchalantly, "Oh no, this is my new pool patio, bitchin', huh?" Woody agrees, then asks, "So, why do you want your pool drained?" Valerie splishes the water a bit and says, "You know, the water just felt really, I don't know, stale recently?" Woody nods, "Yeah, a lot of that's been going around lately." And I gotta say, like, Val impresses me with her ability to flex in these situations.
Yes.
Val asks, "So, about how long is this gonna take?" Woody says, "A day." Val hops into the pool water from her pool patio, and Woody is transfixed by the waves and the water. "Man, if I was 6 inches tall, I'd be riding these waves so hard." I couldn't resist but put that line in. "You know, this morning, they were just like this, and I was in the middle of a great tube when some random surfer knocked me in the head with a board." Val sighs and pulls herself up, sitting on the edge of the pool, saying, "Unbelievable. What am I supposed to do while I'm waiting?" Woody states, "Waste your brain, wax your board, pray for waves, bruh."
I just have to say, her, that would be the worst patio pool furniture because you don't want to put your patio in the pool. The patio goes besides the pool. When you put your patio in the pool, you can't swim in the pool very well.
No, there's just this tiny perimeter of water. But it was still excellent thinking on her part. And I love how Woody was just totally on board for it, man.
Yeah. No, he's up there with the eclectic pool furniture and stale water and 6-inch waves if he was shrunk down. Woody's a character.
Do you think that Woody does some, like, drugs or something?
Oh, for sure. For sure. While Val and Woody chat outside, the three aliens gather around the TV, imitating it, transfixed. They seem to be absorbing the screen, which is broadcasting all sorts of useful information about the planet they've landed on, like how to rope a lady, how to speak horse, and how to act surprised if they happen to win a new car on a game show. Suddenly, the phone rings and the answering machine pops on. We hear Ted's recorded voice say, "Is there a doctor in the house?" "Oh, not now. Leave a message after the beep."
Ooh.
Then we hear Ted's live voice begging Val for forgiveness. "Valerie, I swear I've never done anything like that before.
Mm-hmm.
I only played kissy face once with a nurse and I will never do anything like that ever again.
Mm-hmm.
You saved me from making the biggest mistake of my life. I love you so much, baby. Looking forward to seeing you when I get home after work."
Uh-huh.
We see Ted as he hangs up the phone, and that fucker has a bouquet filled with red and white carnations?
No!
Really?
If you're gonna buy a bouquet of flowers to say, "I'm sorry," a bouquet of red and white carnations? Fuck off, sir.
Yeah. Those are things you give out, like, for free with, I don't know, recipes or some shit. Not to somebody you almost cheated on and probably did cheat on at another time.
I'm
who,
like,
caught you.
It kind of reminds me of, like, the people who will walk alongside your car with the bouquets of flower near, like, Valentine's Day and stuff like that, being like, "Hey, you can have this Valentine's bouquet for your sweetie." Except mm-hmm. those actually have roses in them.
Yes. Yes. He probably took all the roses out and gave them to his other girlfriend. Killed two birds
probably.
With one stone.
Well, I was wondering if he was even going to show up with the bouquet, if he was going to give that to, like, you know, a nurse or something at, like, the hospital, like the one that he invited back to his place, and just been like, "Hey, I'm sorry, I didn't, you know, I just just overcome. My heart needs to heal. And then, you know, by heart, I mean down there. Can you kiss it and make it better?
Oh, God, no, don't. Ugh. Val comes back in and sees the aliens gathered around the TV. Mac plays back Ted's message through alien mimicry magic, and Val's eyes widen. Ted's coming back here? He's a doctor. He's going to know that you're not human. She ponders, if only I had like a million gallons of Nair. Her hamster gets on the wheel, and it's not long before she comes up with a solution.
Bling. Cut to the beauty salon. What's that beauty salon called?
Curl up and die! Yay!
Val sneaks in the aliens and has each take a seat in the dryer chairs. She throws a hair-cutting smock around them and puts the dryer hood over each of their heads, obscuring their faces. Val approaches Candy, who has her back to Val while she primps herself in the mirror, or as I said, in the miro. But we're not doing modern art here. And prepares her, okay, I'm going to show you something and you have to promise me you're not going to freak out. Candy demands, stop it. If you keep on talking like that, you're going to freak me out. Which I was like, that totally makes sense. just tell me what's going on. Val responds, okay, well, an alien ship landed in my backyard pool, but it needs to dry because it got wet. And so I took these three aliens in and fed them. Oh, she fed them diet Pop-Tarts.
Oh, my God. The fucking 80s of it all, where they tried to make everything diet that they really shouldn't have.
Uh-huh. Yeah, she pulls out the diet Pop-Tarts as well as, like, a six-pack of Diet Coke. Nothing washes down diet Pop-Tarts as well as a Diet Coke.
As well as saccharin.
Because it probably was saccharin at that point in time. Yes.
Yep.
So Val says, and then I brought them here so we could give them a makeover to hopefully help them blend in a little. A lady walks by and asks, what did you say? Val responds, don't pay attention to me. I'm on drugs. Like, oh, it's my pool patio. Don't pay attention to me. I'm on drugs. I'm like, perfect. Val, your brain hamster is strong, lady.
I must have looked down when this part was playing because I don't recall another person in the salon. So I was like, if there's people just roaming in and out of there, like, randomly, it's probably not the best place to do those makeovers. But that's just me.
Yes. Well, I initially thought that it was at closing that she did this, but then there was the random lady. So, yeah. I completely agree.
The random lady will just be like, oh, she said she was on drugs and now I'm seeing aliens. Maybe I'm on drugs too.
See? Don't drink the water. It could have acid in it. You never know. So the lady walks off and Candy scoffs. Val, you've got to pull yourself together. No man is worth losing it over like this. Valerie says more firmly, I'm serious. She whips the hair-cutting smocks off the threesome and pops the dryer hoods up, revealing the aliens in awe. They're furry, blue, yellow, and red glory. Candy turns around and freaks the fuck out. Val, those are aliens. Val agrees. Yes, that's what I was telling you. Candy responds, did they take over your brain? Valerie shakes her head. No, I don't think so. Please, Candy, I need your help. If Ted comes home and sees them like this, he's going to want to dissect them or something. If we could just get them looking more human. Candy balks. I thought you didn't want to see Ted anymore. Val agrees. I don't. I just want to talk to him. What every, like, friend that breaks up with their, like, significant other says when you're like, but I thought you're done with him. And they're like, yeah, but we just need to talk. And it's like,
we just need closure. Yeah, exactly. That's all.
Including me. Like, you know. But it's just like, you need to look at the woman in the mirror.
Mm-hmm.
Candy agrees to help assessing the trio. Well, I guess split ends are universal. And apparently they don't have conditioner in space. She shuffles them to her back room, saying over her shoulder to Val, but if they have fleas, I'm out.
That's where she draws the line, really? Fleas?
Yes.
Wow. Yeah. Okay.
I'm like, if you're shaving them down, it doesn't matter. Then they'll, you know. But
this scene reminds me of the first scene when they were in their spaceship and Mac was floating around in his like hibernation chamber, mm-hmm. which was essentially like see-through. But when they were panning over his body and showing his like blue furriness, uh-huh. I mistook, like they kind of like the camera went under him.
Right.
And he was wearing like these leather briefs. And I thought his ass was bare. I'm like, oh, that's a weird choice. Like, he's fully blue, except he has a smooth, bare blue bottom.
Yeah, they have, like, they're wearing kind of, like, underwear-y cod pieces.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But in that first scene, I was like, interesting. They're furry everywhere except for their ass. And then it was made clear. And the next couple of scenes, I'm like, oh, thank God. That was just going to be weird, like seeing them walk around fully in fur, except for their ass cheeks.
Well, you know, you got to let the ass cheeks breathe, is all I'm yeah. saying. Yeah. Sadly, there was no musical number for their transformation, which I think if there ever was to be a musical number, it should have been during their transformation. But
yes.
Who am I?
Travesty.
It was a total travesty. We need to talk with Julie Brown and ask what the fuck happened with that moment. And also, once again, props to Julie Brown for her amazing comedy styling.
And if you're not going to do a musical number, at least give us a montage. Come on, people. What is this, amateur hour?
Seriously. I want to see their different looks before they came out in their final one. Just saying. Mm-hmm.
I want to see them strutting their stuff in various stages of shavedness.
And I want to see them like spraying hairspray into their mouths to eat and, you yes. know, that kind mm-hmm. of a thing.
Let's see what they do with that curling iron, mm-hmm. huh? Let's see where they put ringlets. They're covered in hair.
Not on their ass because they're endless. Nice and smooth. Oh. There's no musical number for their transformation, but since Candy started off grooming Poodle, she had no problem with their transformation. We see Whiplock as a blonde surfer dude in black board shorts and a red tank. And he's played by Jim Carrey. What?
A very young Jim Carrey.
Before he became yes. the superstar that he is today. Then we yes. see Zeebo looking adorable in khakis and a tank top, played by Damon Wayans. Also, young Damon Wayans, who now has a son who looks exactly like him.
He didn't say this, but when he comes out, she's like, listen, she's like, Zeebo. And he goes, oh my God, I'm totally black.
Yeah. Which was done in Julie Brown's voice.
Yes. He mimicked her. Yeah. Oh my God, I'm totally black.
And Candy has saved the best for last. As she reveals the Adonis that is Mac. One of the reasons why I did the section as far down is I didn't want you getting in trouble with the Larry for this. He comes out wearing a pair of Z Cavaricis. Ooh, nothing like pleat front pants, huh?
Uh-huh, with the flared thigh.
Oh, ooh. And shirtless, definitely no shirt. He's got an adorable flop of dark brown hair atop his head, and he looks sexy as fuck. And Val agrees.
You're going to say who he is? A young who?
Jeff Goldblum. And this is when he was in the height of his popularity. Love Jeff Goldblum. Hotness. Mm. Val has hearts in her eyes, and I'm pretty sure she had to wipe the drool from her mouth. Candy, wanting to bask in her triumph and hang out with a few hot guys, insists they all go out clubbing. Val doesn't think it's a good idea. Corinne doesn't think it's a good idea. Tamara, what do you think about this idea?
If I was single and they looked that good, I'd be like, yes, I'm going to go. Where's my ex-boyfriend tonight? We're going to go flaunt you in front of him.
You're going to have them like carry you around on a sedan chair.
Yes.
But Candy insists, just like Tamara would, that they go to the club.
It's so funny because Jeff Goldblum didn't have his kind of quintessential voice inflections early on. I wonder when they came about. I think like he started doing it in Jurassic Park. Mm. They stopped wondering if they could and started wondering if they should. There's a funny bit that he does with Conan O'Brien on Conan O'Brien. Is it Conan O'Brien Needs a Friend?
Uh-huh.
On Conan O'Brien's show, where Conan's talking about how sensual Jeff Goldblum is. And Jeff Goldblum is totally, like, playing into it. And it sounds for a good, like, 5 to 10 minutes that they're about to make out.
Ooh.
Mm-hmm.
I'd watch that movie.
I think it's his podcast.
I'd watch that podcast. I'd listen to that podcast. My ears would be burning and I'd be loving every minute of it.
On the way to the club, Val muses to Candy about Ted. He said he'd only cheated that one time and it was just because he was getting married. Maybe that's just what guys do. Right off. If you're trying to convince yourself into that, honey, you have deeper problems than Ted.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And also, no, it's not just what guys do. Particularly, there's not even a bachelor party to, like, blame on this. It's just, like, where you're really like, but all the other guys were being, like, torn dogs. No, it's just you by yourself bringing a woman back to the house. No.
And if that's what guys do, then that's when guys shouldn't get married.
Absolutely.
Long and short of it. Black and white. No gray area.
100%.
But Candy doesn't believe that for a second. Horny Whiplock notices a convertible full of hot valley girls, and when they flirt with them, and jumps into the car, and they whisk them around to party. Woo! Much like the woo girls that they described in How I Met Your Mother, the sitcom. Val, Mac, Zeebo, and Candy follow them along to the club, which looks kind of like Griffith Observatory, but Corinne writes, maybe I'm wrong, and Tamara writes, no, you're not wrong, that's totally Griffith Observatory.
And they pull up next to a piano car?
Yeah, there's many interesting set design things here, and the piano car was one of them. Inside the club, aliens and humans alike are having a great time, except Val. She glumly says, I'm just going to wait outside. In true Corinne form, she said that, not me. This is her writing.
It's true. Do you disagree?
I haven't experienced that with you that often to say that that's your norm.
Remember the most recent time we went to a club, which was in Texas, and
Obsessed Mess. Yeah.
Yes.
But you were like, it's too fucking loud in here. I'm out. I'm going to be on the patio.
Yeah.
Okay. Now I see what you're saying.
Yeah.
If it's a nightclub, you're going to beeline right outside. Okay. Well, we wouldn't even go to a nightclub. If somebody took me to a nightclub in this day and age, I'd be like, are you mad at me? Why would you think I'm mad at you? Because we're going to be talking like this all night. What? I said, because we're going to be talking like this. Anyways, Val goes outside and has a drink alone on an outdoor patio that randomly has a person playing a grand piano on it with a fully lit candelabra. While they're playing the grand piano with their fingers, the fully lit candelabra is just sitting on the piano. The three aliens inside have the ladies all over them, and Zeebo gets into a dance-off with another club goer, while Whiplock, enjoying a cocktail, grabs an ice cube from his drink with his very, very long tongue.
Mm-hmm.
The blondes who are with him immediately want to snag him and test that impressive oral appendage, and Corinne has to admit that that was an oral sex reference that completely went over her head in high school. Is that right?
I was like, oh, this is about oral sex. I really did not pick up on that when I watched it the first time.
Oh, my gosh. Okay. I'm glad I got this part because you brushed over this dance off, which doesn't need to go into like a great amount of detail.
I fully gave you this part on purpose.
Oh, no. Yeah. I don't. There, this part was meaty. It's like three paragraphs long. I just wanted to say about the dance off. It is an 80s dance-off to behold. Break into electric boogaloo-style dancing. It was quite a show. But in one of the scenes, like, they jump into these, like, go-go cages in order to use the bars to, like, maneuver around and do some impressive moves.
Yeah.
But when they're panning the camera back from Zeebo to Dance Battle Guy, in two of the shots, Zeebo is somebody completely different. I think he was the double extra that they got that was actually doing the dancing.
Uh-huh.
And so Dance Battle Guy's like rocking back and forth. And then the camera shows Zeebo in the background, not Zeebo in the background, like rocking back and forth. And I'm like, serious? You guys didn't even try to conceal that. That's totally not him. Like, what? every black guy looks the same? What is this?
And I was just like, wow, I wonder if that's Damon Wayans doing all the dancing.
No, it definitely wasn't. It was Sydney, Mr. Dancer Pants. I don't know what his name was.
Sydney, Mr. Dancer Pants.
Sydney, Mr. Dancer Pants got two full-on, like, full frontal shots where he was just, like, vibing with the dance battle guy. And I was like, oh, holy balls. Like, you, that's just lazy right there. That is lazy editing, and I am appalled.
And apparently the dance battle guy, who is not Sydney Dancer Pants or whoever that is Wayne Crescendo Ward.
Oh, am I supposed to recognize that name?
No, I just thought it was a funny name, and so I'm sharing it.
Wayne Crescendo Warren did do some other things, but nothing really notable. 17 acting credits, including Naked Gun 33 and a third.
Ooh. There must have been an exciting breakdance fight in that movie. I don't want to see another dancer unless they were in Breaking 2 Electric Boogaloo. That's all I'm saying.
Mm-hmm.
If you're going to dance fight, you need to have been from Breaking 2 Electric Boogaloo.
And that guy's name, the interesting guy's name that you said, his name in the movie was Demon, like demon with an E.
Oh, well, hello.
When Candy sees Whiplock's tongue action, she tells the other ladies to skedaddle and immediately starts making out with him. Mac is also dancing with an attractive lady who's fawning all over him, but he leaves her abruptly to find Al. Val.
If you'll be my bodyguard,
I can be your long lost pal. I can call you Mac and Fluckin' for the burners, and you can call me
Al. Call me Al or Mac and Flicker Flickers. Yes.
When he spots her on the outdoor patio, he tells the pianist to give his thumbs a break and slides onto the piano bench. Corinne thinks he's going to be making terrible noises on the piano, but the limited time he has watching the piano player on TV has caused him to absorb some playing prowess, and he performs some impressive jazz progressions. Val sees him and approaches in awe, saying, "You can actually play that?" He looks at her softly and asks searchingly, "Are we limp and hard to manage?" That's cute. Oh, she assures him, "No, you're fine. I'm just having a hard time right now. I figured that everything would fall into place if I found Mr. Wright." Mac asks, "Mr. Wright?" Val nods, explaining, "Yeah, Mr. Wright is the guy you dream of meeting ever since you're a little girl, and you'd go around to do anything just so that you'd be together, and he feels the same way about you because you're right for each other." The duo eventually ditch the piano and walk around outside Griffith Observatory. I mean the nightclub that they're at. It's definitely not an observatory.
It has telescopes around the perimeter, as nightclubs are wont to do.
Yes. What goes better together than billion-dollar telescopes and drunk people?
Oh, I've been there. I went to a nerd night out at an observatory that's near me. There was drinking and there was like some cool stuff. There was pinball. And then you could go out into this observatory area and it was all lit in red so that it doesn't ruin the night sky. Mm-hmm. And there were like people there with their little telescopes and everything. It was so cool. And I was all by myself and feeling kind of alienated because everybody else had like people they were hanging out with, but it was fine. I was fine. So good at doing things on my own. Awesome.
I am not.
I'm good at seeing movies on my own. I'm good at like eating on my own. Like I'll go to a restaurant, no problem, on my own. But ask me to go to a social event on my own. It's then Corinne goes to the social event for 5 minutes and then it's like, okay, well, gotta go. Bye. Nice seeing you.
I usually go to a social event if I don't know anybody or only know like, I used to do this with Dan a lot. Like we would go to his work parties or whatever, uh-huh. Where I would have no idea who anybody was. And I would find one person and we strike up a good conversation and I'd latch onto them all night. And we'd just hang out, just the two of us.
Aww.
I'm like, I wonder why I do that. I'm like, oh, this is how it was when you grew up with your sister. You have one person, that's your person, and you stick with your person.
It's important to stick with your person. That's why I've stuck by you, Tamara, for all these years.
I know. See, and that's fair, but most of these people at the parties don't know that they're my person. They're just like, why won't this girl leave me alone and go talk to somebody else? I'm like, Valerie!
They are lucky!
Valerie! Come back over here, Valerie! I wasn't done telling you that funny story that I started 20 minutes ago.
They were so lucky to have you by their sides. That's all I'm saying.
Well, thank you. Anyways, while they're walking outside, Mac reveals that they're from the planet Jazhala. And Val says, if I didn't know who you were, I just think you were a really cute guy who probably has a girlfriend. Mac looks at her earnestly and says, no, Mr. Right girlfriend. He starts going in for the kiss. The kiss tractor beams locking on when suddenly they hear, yale, 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 hee-hoo. And kisses interrupt us. Did they happen upon a mountainside that was behind the observatory? No. It's just Whiplock who's yodeling inside.
Mm-hmm. Inside his heart and outside of his head because he gets to make out with Julie Brown. Val and Mac go back into the club and Zeebo has amassed an adoring lady following from his sweet, sweet dance moves. Or, I'm sorry, what was that? What was his dancer double?
Sydney Mr. Dancing Pants.
Yeah, Sydney Mr. Dancing Pants' dance moves. Meanwhile, Whiplock must have been with joy because of the great makeout. Oh, see, because of the great makeout sesh he was having with Candy, because their faces are plastered together. I'm surprised he had a moment to yodelay-he.
I know. Maybe he has like a different orifice that can also make noises like his mouth. Like maybe he can yodel out his ass.
His very smooth ass is like
yodeling out your ass.
Mm-hmm. Beans, beans, the musical fruit.
The more you eat, the more you yodel.
Oh, that's how it goes. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mac grabs Zeebo and Val separates Whiplock and Candy, chastising Candy for making out with an alien in front of everyone. Mac and Val escort Whiplock and Zeebo out to the car, and Candy is in a daze. Two very excited blondes who saw Whiplock's tongue ask her, one of them wearing American Express black credit cards as earrings, they're her daddy's, thank you very much, ask, what was it like? Was it amazing? Candy says, all fuzzy and kiss drunk, I want his baby. And then she passes out from the passion of it all.
Wow, I must not be kissing people, right? Because I've never passed out from the passion of it all.
Yeah, but have you ever dated a guy who's got her tongue?
Unless all the blood is rushing from her head to her vajayjay, I'm wondering if maybe his very long tongue suffocated her because it went clear down her throat and blocked her airways.
Don't reveal the magician's secret. Come on. Back at Val's house, Ted opens the front door calling in, sweetheart, as he pokes the Julio Iglesias record album, 1100 Bel Air Place, through the door. You know that catchy Julio Iglesias album of the ages.
I was wondering, I'm like, is that supposed to tell us something about how their night's supposed to go?
I know, que romantico, huh?
Bésame, bésame mucho.
He says, sweetheart, I'm sorry. He enters the apartment. Not apartment. Yeah. That's because I live in an apartment, gentle listeners. I've been so conditioned. The house that is empty. He goes into his office and sees the computer with the bowling ball in it and scoffs in disbelief. They said this computer would stand up to anything. And I'm like, but did you really think it would survive a bowling ball, asshole? He looks at his fish tank and forgets all about Val as he calls, Beamer, Beamer. He then asks his fish, Aston, where's Martin? Because the douchebag names his fish after cars. And then he asks himself, where's Val? First ask yourself where your fish are. Then ask yourself where your fiance is. Good priorities. And I'm wondering if he thinks that Beamer, Martin, and Val are being held for ransom. Or maybe in a menage a trois of the century.
Oh my God, that's just painting a picture in my head that I don't want. Thank you, Corinne.
Look, once you put Martin and Beamer in a large saltwater tank, what happens is they turn into really hot mermen.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Okay, I can get behind that.
Yeah.
Oh, no, I can't. I remember that merman book that I read that I told you.
Totally that's flushed into
the
my
most
head.
Disgusting. Holy fuck. What the hell did I just read? As me and the mechanic that walked into my office looked awkwardly at each other as they were describing the very graphic female on merman sex scene.
And
believe
you were
in
like,
the sex scene, she was menstruating and he was into it.
And you're like, have you seen a picture of Melody recently? Here, here's a picture of my pupper.
He didn't know Melody at that point, and I was dumbstruck and just appalled that I didn't know he was in there and did not hit the volume in time. And if you haven't heard this story before, gentle listeners, my poor mechanic walked up the stairs, stood there for about 25 seconds.
Into your office.
Into my office, turned around, and walked back down the stairs without saying a word.
He was thinking a lot of things, though, I am sure.
Mm.
He's like, what is that book? He writes you an email. He's like, I was just really interested in the Nat Geo documentary you were listening to. I
believe it's called Pisces.
Ted calls the police in a panic. I want to report a break-in and a possible kidnapping. I thought he was going to say his fish were kidnapped, honestly. Just then, Val pulls up with her alien trio and enters the house. Love her thinking on her feet once again, as we will see imminently. She hears Ted and hisses at the threesome. Act human! Act human! And then she walks down the hall and greets Ted. At first, he's relieved to see her, but then he sees the three grown-ass men hanging out by the front door and asks, who are they? Val nonchalantly replies, oh, they're a band. Ted is confused. A band? What are you doing with a band? Val says, well, I won them on MTV, A Weekend with a Band. And MTV actually did this kind of thing.
Yes, they did. But did you see how the trio of aliens was trying to act natural by the door?
Please explain. It was glorious.
Yes. I know Zeebo was doing the cutest little thing. He had like his hands clasped in front of him and was like swaying side to side with like this huge smile on his face. So he looked like somebody's meemaw or 12-year-old girl. Because he was just like, hi, 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 hi. And then I don't remember what Whiplock was doing. I think he was trying to do some sort of like pop and lock situation with his hands. And the one I remember the most is Mac was behind everybody pretending to shave with a small red stuffed animal head.
Yeah, it's a small red stuffed monkey. I don't know where the stuffed monkey came from. It was from a cutout scene because in between when Max serenaded Val on the piano and they were looking at the telescopes that are surrounding the perimeter of the club, she got a little red stuffed monkey.
Now I'm going to be wondering the rest of my life how that fit into the storyline.
I have no idea. I didn't mention it because it had opened up a whole box of questions. But yeah, she takes the little monkey and she has it look through the telescope. It's kind of cute.
What?
Yeah.
That strand of the story was left dangling. I mean, this whole movie's ironclad up until that point, right?
Look, it got nominated for 5 Oscars for a reason, okay?
Including film editing. Pay no attention to that other dancing man in the go-go cage.
And best score. 'Cause I'm a blonde. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Val continues, I've never had anything like this happen, so they're staying. Mac approaches and greets Ted. Hi, I am Mac. How's it hanging, Mr. Dude? Ted corrects, Dr. Dude. Mac shakes his hand and then kisses it. Very gallantly, wouldn't you say?
Hand kisses are the bastard stepson or stepchild of forehead kisses.
Surprisingly, Ted does not appreciate having his hand kissed by Mac. I don't know why. Maybe because they're the bastard stepchild of forehead kisses.
Yeah, yeah.
He's just wishing, why didn't I get my forehead kissed instead?
You don't want that, Ted. You don't want it. Unless you're being resuscitated.
Ted addresses the threesome. "You all just wait there. I need to talk to Val." And he ushers her into the living room right next to the fish tank. R.I.P. Beamer and Martin. He starts emphasizing how important it is that she kicks the band out and how he really needs to talk to her. Until Whiplock tugs the back of Ted's shirt and in his best imitation of James Dean in Rebel Without a Cause, which, you know, nothing says, "I'm acting normal and human," quite like this. He yells, "You're tearing me apart!" while he contorts his face.
I also found it very interesting that Ted cheats on Val. Val gets upset, kicks him out. And the very next day, he's calling her going, "Hi, honey, I'm sorry. I'll be home later on tonight." Like, that's just, yeah, just gloss over the whole evening. And then coming in after the fact and then making demands on her about who she can and can't have in the house.
Oh, yeah. Just his whole assumption that it's okay that he come back to the house.
And then tell her to get her guests to leave. What are they doing here? Get him out. Ah, no, 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 no. I'm sorry. I kicked you out. You don't live here anymore.
Also, it's not every day that somebody wins a weekend with a fucking band. Honestly, that sounded like my own personal piece of hell every time I heard that from, like, MTV as if it was, like, some kind of prize. I was like, I don't think that's such a prize.
Yeah, you can keep the band. Is there a monetary, like, compensation if you don't want the band?
Uh-huh.
How much is that? $302?
I'll take it.
I'll take it.
Yeah. Because of this period of time, musically, oh, you know, what are we talking about? Like, the rise of a fucking, with Motley Crue is like doing so much heroin and speedballs that, yeah, that sounds like a lot of fun.
Yeah, they even did a docudrama. No, they did a drama reenactment movie about their up and coming years and then the rise of their fame and then their fall. And they were crazy motherfuckers.
Oh, yeah. Super crazy motherfuckers. And it's based on their joint autobiography, which I currently have on audiobook. They each read their own section, surprisingly.
I think it's called The Dirt. Well, I read it from the old manager that worked at the location that I am at, R.I.P. Mike. He was a huge hair metal band fan and loved everything 80s. And when I mentioned that I saw The Dirt on Netflix, and if he'd watch it, he goes, "No, but I have the book. Do you want to borrow it?" And I'm like, okay.
Oh, yeah.
And I did, and I read it.
Yeah, and I'm just listening to them read it to me. Thanks, metal band people. But you know what? They're honestly terrible at, no, they're fine at reading. They're just, their affect when they talk is sort of like this for the most part.
Oh, they have bad affects. And you definitely don't want to win them for a weekend either, I'm sure.
Oh my gosh. The amount of hotels they destroyed. As well as the pranks they pulled on each other. Ted is irritated but pushed to the edge when Whiplock then proceeds to the fish tank and grabs a fish to eat. Ted tackles Whiplock and starts trying to choke him.
You gotta wonder how bad those fat-free Pop-Tarts were if they prefer live goldfish out of the tank.
Yeah. Somebody was like, "Would you like to eat some cardboard or some fat-free Pop-Tarts?" I would be like, "You know what? That cardboard looks pretty tempting. Thank you."
What do you mean? They probably taste about the same.
True. Just one won't catch on fire when you heat it up in the toaster.
That's the
cardboard. Yeah. Ted tries to have the trio of aliens removed from the house, but Val tells the police that Ted is the actual intruder and he doesn't live there anymore. The other officer picks up the fish that Whiplock had been trying to eat from the floor, cradles it, and moves to put it in the water. And Ted calls out, "He was eating my bluegill dorky!" And the officer putting the fish in the water takes offense. "Watch your mouth!" The other officer calls in, "1013, we have channeling Tamara." No, you do a better one than I do.
That's too much pressure. 1013, we have a false report.
Yes!
His girlfriend dumped him for a rock band.
And arrests Ted. As Ted is being dragged down the hall and out the door, he yells at Val, "If you thought I was going to spend the rest of my life with you and your weird friends and your psychotic..." Your weird friends and your psychotic friends? Okay. Corinne, you need to edit sometimes.
No, it makes perfect sense because Mac's weird, Whiplock is psychotic, And Zeebo's adorable. See, if you kept going, you probably would have gone, you're weird, you're psychotic, and you're adorable friends.
Right, because Zeebo is undeniably adorable, even when he is another man. Zeebo is standing next to his body double dancer and talking to some girls saying, look at me dancing! Look at me dancing! As Ted is being dragged down the hall and out the door, he yells at Val, if you thought I was going to spend the rest of my life with you and your weird friend and your psychotic friend and your adorable friend, you're crazy. The wedding is off, Val. Once the officers and Ted leave, Val says sadly, I'm going to bed. And she goes to her bedroom and goes to bed wearing bloomers and a bra. Okay, that don't typically. Oh. Okay, I sleep naked. But if I'm not going to sleep naked because I have guests over, I'm like tank top and shorts or, you know, or like my cute Jimmy Jams. But the weird bloomer shorts and a bra, I do not sleep with a bra on. Thank you very much.
Well, you remember Val's got her own mad flavor, see, so.
It's true. She was inspired by the curls.
Mm-hmm. And also when Ted said the wedding's off, who said it was back on, fucker? Mm-hmm. You guys were broken up. Mm-hmm. She's like, you're the wedding's off. Yeah, I know. Okay, bye.
I threw truffles at you. Perfectly good truffles at you.
And champagne. You can see where our priorities are. You keep bringing up the truffles and I keep bringing up the champagne.
And what does he bring her? Does he bring her replacement chocolates? No. He brings her fucking red and white carnations.
Yes. Yes. Anywho, Mac whispers something to Whiplock and Zeebo, and they both have his back. Have his back in what? Why, Mac goes into Val's room and asks softly, is Ted coming back? Val says sadly, no, Ted doesn't want to come back, and I'm not sure what he wants, but it's not me.
Val. Also, Ted's in jail. Val. Ted's in jail, okay?
Val. Val. Honey, you need to know your self-worth because all of that after what he did and you still are like, he doesn't want me. Good. It's good. Good, Val. That's good. That's what we want. Ugh. And Mac also wants to know. He asks insightfully, what does Valerie want? And she says, I don't know. I just want to be happy. Mac says to her, Mac could make Valerie happy. She stares off sadly into the darkness of her room and says, thanks, but I don't think anyone could make me feel very good right now. Matt gets a puzzled look on his face. Matt could make Valerie feel very, very good. And gentle listeners, we now reference an earlier part of the movie that we hadn't included when Whiplock grabbed Val's fluffy white cat and the cat didn't like it and Mac used some kind of special touch power on the cat, making it bliss out. And I think they all have a special power. Mac's bliss touch, perhaps Whiplock is long bendy tongue, and Zeebo may have gotten the short end of the stick. From what I can tell, his special power is making his ears wiggle. And Tamara writes, and he can dance and completely change into somebody else while doing it.
And point at the person who is him dancing and just be like, don't I dance good?
Yeah. Anywho, we move back to the present and Valerie objects. No, I'm not ready for sex right now. I'm not ready for anything. And Mac, who doesn't know about no meaning no, but is gently moving forward with escalating the situation, asks, what's sex? Val explains. It's when two people like each other and get naked, and she wiggles her eyebrows. And Mac says, okay, and starts taking off his clothes. Valerie tries shutting it down, but not really trying very hard.
Yeah.
No, we can't, because me and Ted are... She trails off and tries again. I mean, you're an alien and I'm from the valley and the long distance bills would be astronomical. He tosses his shirt off and she continues. I mean, this may not even work anatomically. Mac drops his pants and she gulps when she sees what she sees, saying, oh, okay, I guess that's not an issue. He sits on the bed next to her, gazing at her softly, and she says, I just don't want you to think. And the KISS tractor beam locks on, and she mumbles with less commitment, that Earth girls are easy. Their faces move closer to each other, and he asks, what's easy? She moves her face closer to him, saying softly, this is easy. And they kiss, and he lightly brushes the side of her face, leaving What I can only imagine is a rainbow mark of ecstasy. Mm-hmm. Most movies would have cut once their kiss fell out of the frame, but not this one. No. A lovemaking scene like no other unfolds before our very eyes. Purpley hues, tangled bodies, synth music playing in the background, rainbow kisses, passionate embraces, sprinkles of rain that eventually turn into diamonds that fall in slow-mo over their horizontal bed-dancing bodies until they finally fall asleep in each other's arms.
What did you think of that scene?
I was like, what in the Sam motherfucking hell? This is like an aspiring porn director who also wants to be an MTV video music producer back in the day when MTV actually played music videos, but couldn't decide. So just tossed everything in like a salad and let the chips fall where they may.
Oh my God. I cannot believe this movie was rated PG. I was like, this scene is special in a way that I didn't think love scenes could be special.
Oh, it was special, all right.
I felt very uncomfortable watching it.
I was glad I was alone watching it, because I was like, what the fuck? Oh.
Who knows the heights of passion you could have had with Larry?
No. We probably would have dissected that thing at length and talked shit about it for 5 to 10 minutes.
Oh.
And the last sentence Corinne writes is, and then Val has a wild dream that I'm too lazy to describe because it's complicated, but Tamara's welcome to if she wants. Okay. Wild dream in a nutshell, and you can totally cut this if the length is too long. Where do we start? It's black and white and kind of film noir. On her TV, she's watching alien movies of creatures carrying away beautiful women, like Creature from the Black Lagoon and Beauty and the Beast. And not the Disney one. It's the more like...
It's the old French one. Yeah.
Yes.
It's in black and white.
Yes. Then she inexplicably glides through the house, but everything is distorted. She finds a screeching Oompa Loompa holding a box of Captain Crunch in a refrigerator, a bunch of plastic face looking aliens in her living room doing random things like staring at a police siren that's sitting on her dining room table, or another that's on the floor chugging a 6-pack of beer. In her front yard, all her neighbors have turned into grotesque creatures, but are carrying on like usual, mowing lawns, walking dogs, etc. In her backyard, a group of different colored people, like purple, green, and red, not like different diversity nationalities, are lifting weights. Then she sees Ted and screams for him to help, but he has a four-breasted woman on his lap and a fishbowl on his head. Ted ultimately does come over and embraces her, but then notices that his fish are all fucked up and then gets in a fight with Mac until Val breaks it up by blasting both of them with the hairdryer.
Wow! Tamara, you are my hero.
They had that dream sequence on YouTube, so I was able just to cut to it and be like, oh, yeah, that's a fuck dream.
I was like, I can't. Did I ever tell you you're my hero?
Am I the wind beneath your wings?
You are the wind beneath my wings, and that dream is special. The next morning, Mac and Valerie's snuggling is interrupted by Zeebo and Whiplock tapping on her window and announcing that the pool is empty. Mac goes out and works on fixing up the ship with Zeebo and Whiplock while Val prepares some brekkie. She goes out to the backyard with mugs of decaf coffee for the aliens. I'm sure it's instant. And she lets them know that she's making pancakes for them. Mac, however, tells her, well, we can go home now. And Val's face falls. Oh, yeah, I didn't realize it would be so soon. Mac is going to try talking to her, but the phone rings and she leaves to take it. When she leaves, Woody the pool guy enters the backyard and exclaims, whoa, what's that? It looks like a spaceship. The three aliens scoff, spaceship? No, it's a car. Woody laughs. She must have driven that car into the pool. That happens to me a lot. But this isn't like any car I've ever seen. Where's it from? Mac explains, Norway. Woody nods knowingly. Norway, yeah, of course, it's from Norway. Meanwhile, Val is talking on the phone to Ted. She explains to him how she might be able to forgive him for bringing home another woman, but breaking off the engagement is a step too far.
Oh, my God. Oh, Val. Oh, Val. Know your worth, Val. Know your worth, and it's not just the ringlets on your head, honey.
Oh, I know. I'm like, no, baby, no. Just, that's not a step too far.
And although she has questionable fashion sense, she's got a rockin' body and a beautiful face.
Oh, and she's, like, smart and interesting. And, like, honestly, if I had a partner, a fiancé, and they broke off the engagement, we could have a conversation. We could potentially move forward from there and get married. Because sometimes, like, things, you know, explode or whatever, and you just need to have, like, these important conversations. However, when you don't have an open relationship and you're just bringing ladies back home to the apartment when nobody, when I'm gone at my nail conference, oh, fuck that shit. Mm. That's shady as hell. No. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Ted begs her as he talks to her from his car phone. I didn't mean that, and I'm never going to look at another woman again. It's you I want. The only reason I'd look at another woman is if I had to give them a physical examination. I am a doctor, after all. And I halfway expected a woman to bring her head up from his lap while he was talking to Val, but that didn't happen. Instead, Val says, a relationship is a lot like a porcelain nail. You can break it and glue it back together, but if the person isn't careful and doesn't stay away from nurses, it will break. I loved that metaphor.
Yes.
When was the last time you said to me, I love you, I need you, I can't live without you? Mac ducks his head in the door just in time to hear her say, I love you, I need you, etc. And his face darkens and he quickly backtracks out. However, he can't find Zeebo and Whiplock until he goes out front and sees the duo in Woody's car. They're headed to Zuma Beach to pick up chicks. Mac tries to get them to leave the car, but the duo has women on their brain, and Mac does his best to follow the vehicle on foot.
And then the movie goes completely off the rails. There's a 'cause I'm a blonde, yeah, 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 musical number, and it is like the antithesis of Legally Blonde, where yeah. Legally Blonde, the women are blonde, but strong and smart and empowered. I'm a blonde. Julie Brown dons a very bad blonde wig and she sings about her vapid point of view about not needing to work or cook because she can shake her and shimmy her boobies.
Yes. And hypocritically, there is a blonde beauty contest and she takes the blonde wig off of the winner so that the brown hair is revealed. And she gets crowned with her very bad blonde wig.
Right, right,
the
right.
winner instead.
And it's very catchy, though.
Yes.
Because I'm a blonde. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Because I'm a blonde.
B-L-O-L.
Whatever.
It's catchy, and it's the one song that we remember from the movie.
Yes. Woody stops at a gas station to fill up his wagon. In a neighboring car, a kid points his toy but realistic-looking gun at Zeebo, who sticks his finger in the gun hole, and it gets stuck. Woody requests that Zeebo and Whiplock go into the gas station, man, and pick up some, like, sandwich stuff and road snacks. And when Zeebo approaches the cashier with the gun stuck to his finger, the cashier thinks it's a robbery and shoves the register drawer at the two, who happily take the cash and a crapload of candy, not realizing what they've done. Then, a buxom blonde named Angeline, an unusual LA icon in a pink convertible, asks the aliens to move forward so she can pump some gas, too.
And there's a whole movie instead, about her on Max.
Yes. I discovered Angeline. She has a very, she has a look.
Yes.
She looks like a, I want to say porn Barbie. Porn Barbie from the 80s, if that was a thing.
Like porn and, Barbie from the future from the 80s. Yes.
Yes. And she has a pink Corvette. And she, for the longest time, she would just have billboards all over LA that just said, Angeline. And I was like, who the fuck is Angeline? That was part of her marketing ploy, and it worked because I looked her up and I was like, okay, this is a very interesting story. Unusual LA icon. Anywho. Instead, the aliens reverse into her Corvette and then pull forward, hitting another car, and then chaos ensues and they ultimately destroy the gas station. Woody calls Val for backup from a payphone, and she hustles over to the gas station, but not before Mac shows up on foot. Angeline points him out as a suspect. And did Woody get arrested with him?
Initially, Woody got arrested and Mac wasn't arrested. And then when they cut back around, Woody is magically unarrested and Mac is arrested.
Okay.
Yeah.
That makes way more sense because I'm like, you are, you're not. You are, you're not. Okay. Banner editing. Earth Girls Are Easy.
Yeah.
Good job.
This is why I entitled this section, and the movie was doing so well up until this point.
Good call, Corinne. Anywho, Val demands the cops release her friends, and when they decline, she demands to go with them. And when they brush off again, she takes matters into her own hands and smashes a cop car lights with a broken fender, successfully getting herself arrested. So Mac and Val are sitting in the back of the cruiser with the police officers who were at Val's house the night before. Wow, seen a lot of you lately.
Uh-huh.
Hey, lady. Where are Zeebo and Whiplock, you may ask? Well, they're tearing down the road all kinds of the wrong way in Woody's wagon, ultimately flying off an overpass and landing the car in the middle of a Randy's Donuts, which is a donut shop chain in Southern California made famous by placing huge donut-shaped signs on their roof. And Whiplock and Zeebo have lodged Woody's wagon right in the center of their donut hole. As Mac and Val are being taken to the police station in the back of the cruiser, they hear over the radio that Zeebo and Whiplock have been arrested but are first being taken to the hospital. Ted's hospital. Uh-oh. Val's very concerned again about Ted examining Zeebo and Whiplock and turning them into science experiments, so she asks Mac to use his special rainbow erotic love touch on the police so she can work her sexual wiles on the officers and get them to take the pair to the hospital instead of jail. Mac is confused. You want me to have sex with them? She insists, no. Not that, but he needs to use his feel-good touch to save their friends. Mac touches the first officer on the shoulder, and to Val's surprise, he's not interested in her. He's interested in his partner. Mm. Mac touches the other officer's shoulder, and it turns out the feeling is mutual between the both of them. They're in love. But under the love drug, they're in no condition to drive, so they obviously switch places so Val can drive the police car to the hospital and the two officers can sit happily in the back seat, embracing their newfound love for each other.
Aww. Oh, this movie and its diversity. Hello. Musketeer. Not really. But yes. And
it's a faux musketeer. Yeah. It's a faux musketeer.
Musketeer.
Brought on by a erotic rainbow love touch.
This next section I entitled, gentle listeners, I'm sorry if this makes no sense, but you can see the movie on Freevee or Peacock, and maybe it will. I'm referring to the previous thing that Tamara was talking about and also to this whole end part. Yes. Val and Mac discover that to access the level of the hospital where Zeebo and Whiplock are, they need special clearance. So Val ends up pretending she has a gun and forcing the nurse that was initially trying to hook up with Ted into a bandaged patient's room and making her give Val her clothes. Val and Mac, now quasi-dressed as hospital workers, find Zeebo, Whiplock, and Ted. They never explain how Mac got his hospital clothing, and they never put the stereotypical nurse's hat on top of Val's head for some reason. I don't know why.
Or how they, like, contained the nurse, because all they show is her putting, like, a small adhesive bandage on her mouth that was it looked like it was about to fall off as soon as she put it on. And she's like, and I'm like, is that what's holding her in the room and keeping her from turning you guys in? Okay, sure, Jan.
Yeah, and the fucking, like, guy that's in a mummy cast when she's like, help me, press your call button. He's like, no.
I want to see you naked, nurse.
Yeah, I was like, oh my gosh. And the outfit that Val was wearing before this, I think looks like unflattering 80s maternity clothing, personally. And we see it after, too, because she magically changes out of her nurse costume, which we never see, and back into her horrible 80s maternity clothes. Even though she takes birth control, but the way she takes birth control, it's no wonder, because you can't take birth control like that and not get pregnant.
You lost me.
Where did I lose you?
You're talking about birth control and then nurse's gear and then her clothes that look like maternity.
So her clothes look like maternity clothes. And I was like,
got that.
But I was going to say, but she's not pregnant. But then I was like, right. You know what? She probably is pregnant because of the way she takes birth control. There's no way that it's effective at all because she kind of is like absent-minded about it. And then when she's having sex, she's like, oh, you know what I should do? I should just like pop a couple of these into my mouth. That'll work, right?
Well, she took one before she had sex with Ted in the first night.
Yeah.
And the second night when she was about to sleep with Mac, she took like seven. Yeah. Because she goes, I'm not going to have a half alien baby.
She's like, I think this guy's super fertile. I need a little extra protection. Perhaps. Yeah.
Yeah. That sperm's going to crawl its way all the way up into her vajayjay and her egg and her entrails. Mm-hmm. And then who knows?
It's going to magic love rainbow touch her. So Val and Mac are now quasi-dressed as hospital workers, find Zeebo, Whiplock, and Ted, who is indeed trying to turn them into a science experiment after discovering they both have two hearts. Ted doesn't recognize Val or Mac because they are wearing face masks so obviously. And he is very excited about his discovery until Mac uses his skill of imitation to make it sound like everyone has two hearts. And then the alien trio makes all kinds of noises convincing Ted that he is off his rocker. Ted flees from the room and mysteriously walks strangely down the hall. He literally is walking strangely. I don't know why. Whatever. Val rushes the alien squad out of the hospital to Ted's car. Why does she have them go into Ted's car? I do not know. But she does have them crawl into the back seat to, quote, hide. Yes, Tam? Oh,
I remember this part. Keep going. Because I was like, are you fucking serious right now? Keep going.
She has the threesome hide in the back seat and has changed back into her regular clothes, the maternity clothes that I was previously talking about. Ted comes out of the hospital and is so relieved to see Val. He says, I'm having such an odd day. I think I've been hearing things. Can you drive? I just want to go home. Val gets in the car, and as they drive, Ted confesses, I think we should go to Vegas tonight to get married. Val is at first taken aback by his proposition because he's been acting like a royal ass, but then is magically thrilled by the idea. And at first I thought she was fake thrilled because she's just trying to distract from the whole aliens in the back seat thing. But then we find out she's actually really genuinely thrilled about this idea.
Not only is that weird, but what is weirder is that Ted is turning to talk to Valerie. They're in a four-door sedan. It's not a large car. There are three grown-ass men kind of sort of crouching in the back seat, but are all clearly visible.
Yes.
When the camera shows the two of them talking. But Ted miraculously never notices them. Uh-huh. He's just talking to Val and being like, let's go to Vegas, baby. Pay no attention to those three aliens in the back seat. Really? That was, oh my God. I'm like, I can't even. They don't have anything covering them. They're just kind of like, not even...
They're peering over the back seat.
Yeah.
But, you know, in fairness, Ted does not have eyes in the back of his head. He's just looking straight forward.
No, he wasn't. He was looking at Val while she was driving. That's why I was like, his head was fully turned. Like, you could see all of the guys in his peripheral the way he was looking at Val. I'm just like,
I have bad news about Ted. His peripheral vision is not there. Actually, this is why he's made so many bad life choices. It's because he hasn't had the peripheral vision in his life.
Hi, my name's Ted, and I have no peripheral vision. Hi, Ted.
Ted, how did you ever get through? I don't know, but by sleeping with a lot of different women, I've somehow managed.
And now you know why he was walking strangely down the hall, because he has no peripheral vision.
He needs a shot of something.
Yeah.
She's lucky he didn't sleep with her. Oh. So, Val is so excited, she stops the car in her neighborhood to kiss Ted, and the three aliens pile silently out of the back of the seat while they're kissing, and head towards the house on foot.
Good thing they got out of there when they did. Boy, howdy, it was touch and go there for a second.
They could have been discovered. Fortunately, Ted has a visual problem. He does not have peripheral vision. Oh, poor Ted.
That's what we're saying to make this make any sense.
Kind of, because it still makes absolutely no sense. Val and Ted drive back to the house and immediately start packing for Vegas because that's what one does. While Val is looking for her something old and something new, Ted is in his office on his Mallard Duck phone calling his coworker. Oh, and previously when Val was talking to Ted on the phone and saying, "You never say you love me and you care about me," she was talking on the epic lip phone.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. But so he's talking on a Mallard phone. All of these are epic 80s phones. And he's calling his coworker, Barbara. She's a doctor as well, to see if she'll cover his shift. While he talks, he grabs a pair of handcuffs and a couple of videotapes to take with him, as one is wont to do. The videotapes are Rita the Handmaiden and Fun in the Barnyard.
Wow.
Barbara asks what he's up to. He shares that, "Oh, you know, I'm just going to Vegas to gamble a bit, lose a little money. Oh, and, you know, no big get married." Barbara is pissed. And he tries to soothe her, saying, "Barbara, just because I'm getting married doesn't mean that we can't date."
Yes, yes, it does, Ted.
So this is like another person who is, it wasn't just the one nurse. Shockingly, I know it's hard to believe that it wasn't just the one nurse that he was with.
Val's all packed up, and while she waits for Ted to make calls and get his work shift covered, she heads out to the backyard to say goodbye to her alien friends. She gives Zeebo a kiss on the cheek, telling him that she'll miss him. She says to Whiplock, "Yeah, I just find you kind of gross." He smiles blankly at her and asks, "Liplock for Whiplock?" And she begrudgingly kisses him on the cheek. Then Mac, who's on top of the ship, looks down at Valerie, who's on the bottom of the pool, and says, "Valerie, I don't have the words." She looks up at him and says, with hearts in her eyes, "I'm going to miss you so much." He looks at her softly and he says, "I'm going to miss you too." But their moment is interrupted when Ted comes rushing out into the backyard, exclaiming that he booked the caveman suite at Cupid's Lodge because nothing is more romantical than that. Then he sees the spaceship and freaks the fuck out. Val quickly explains that the trio he met wasn't from MTV. They're actually aliens.
What?
He tries fending off the spaceship that isn't doing anything with the pool skimmer. And then he suddenly realizes, "Oh, you've been contaminated by these aliens. We're not getting married. I'm calling it all off." He tries to scramble out of the pool while Val grabs onto his leg, assuring him that she doesn't have alien cooties. Max sees this and uses his rainbow erotic magic love touch remotely on the couple, so they're all sexy feelings towards each other. Val and Ted start kissing passionately, and the ship slowly starts to lift off the ground or out of the pool when Val suddenly springs up. And Ted remains lying on the ground, writhing in ecstasy because Val's been replaced by the cat. Val yells, Mac, it didn't work. I have to tell you something. I love you. Take me with you." Aww. Mac excitedly yells back, "I'm Mr. Right?" She yells, "Yes, yes." Val climbs up to the pool ladder and Mac maneuvers so he can reach out and pull her onto the ship. And he does. And he kisses her. And it's a good one. And they fly off possibly to Jazala. Possibly somewhere else. The credits roll and we hear the worst cover of Love Train that I've ever heard. It's by Hall & Oates. The end. Nice way to tie it up with an insult, Corinne.
I'm sorry. Did you like that cover of
Love Train? I don't even remember it. I was like, oh, damn, I have to go back and listen to it again. It didn't even register. I was just sitting there like, while the music was playing, I'm like, Val, you're flying off with an alien to another planet that you've known for a day. Okay, that sounds like a great idea.
What just happened? Yeah.
So, Corinne, how many dry kisses do you give Earth Girls Are Easy?
All right, let's first go over the dry kiss rating scale. 1 kiss, do not watch. 2 kiss, if you had only 3 channels, you might watch it for a while before changing to an infomercial and then inadvertently buy yourself knives and then feel guilty, particularly when they don't cut a can as advertised. So many regrets. 3 kisses, yay, I would kiss this movie again. 4 kiss, the date night you've been waiting for. And 5 kisses. If this movie were life, you'd have gotten dressed by a cute cartoon animal, some squirrels immaculately washed your dishes, and you rode to work on a unicorn. Which actually is kind of like the strangeness that is the end of this movie, but that's beside the point. I am going to say 3.5 dry kisses. I would have rated it higher if it hadn't gone completely off the rails.
Yeah.
Because it's really clever. It's a lot of fun. And I think it has a lot of good writing and just these funny touches. And it has a really sweet love story in it. Do I think it's like a really good movie? No. But it is delightful in a lot of ways until you're just like, wait, what? What the fuck is happening? Okay. Sure. They decided to go that direction. Okay. Why? What? Yeah. No. So I give it 3.5 dry kisses. How many dry kisses do you give this, Tam?
I'm going to say 2.75 uh-huh. because I don't want to give it a 3. I think everybody should watch this movie at least once
yes.
and then never again. So I give it the 2.75 because is it entertaining? Yes. Is it quirky and kitschy? Yes. Is the storyline good? Not exactly. There's a lot of holes, a lot of mistakes, and a lot of unforgivable things. Like Val constantly forgiving Ted and Ted just acting like nothing happened and they're together. They're not together. They're together. They're not together. And then, of course, Val, like I said, at the end, flying off with the man that she's met for one day, who's not her race or on the same planet as her. And she's just going to just escape everything and fly away with him. It's a little hard to digest, but, you know, that's neither here nor there. I did find it entertaining, but I will probably never watch it again unless I'm going to watch it with somebody and we're going to talk shit about it at length.
Well, exactly. I would say that this is a good movie to get high to and watch. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so now we go through the 4 Musketeers of Diversity. Did this movie have body diversity?
No.
A little bit in some of the background characters, but I'm going to agree with you. Sexual diversity?
Not really.
The policemen, they're budding love with each other.
Yeah, and they went from talking like normal people to suddenly talking like this.
I did not catch that. Racial diversity.
Well, there was Damon Wayans.
Yes, Damon Wayans. Damon Wayans' dance rival.
Yes.
Damon Wayans' dancer, who has also had a couple of small parts in this movie when he was shown accidentally.
The two dancing twins during the third musical number we encountered. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. The one part I did like about this movie is when they were going out clubbing and they were like driving around in the valley,
uh-huh.
they like came across a bunch of Hispanics and lowriders that were like flanking them.
They were cruising.
And they weren't like,
yeah.
Yeah, they were cruising and they were just like, hey, like totally normal and natural, not like, oh my God. And then, like, uh-huh. And then look at these guys and they're hanging lowriders.
Yeah, and they're going to like mug us or something like that.
Yes. Yeah. They were just like pointing at him, like, hey, how's it going?
Yeah.
So I appreciated that small second of acceptance and normalcy when you see people of a different nationality.
So it's a leg of, half a musketeer of racial diversity.
Mm-hmm. I would say so. Yeah, that's fair.
And disability representation. Ted did have that peripheral vision problem.
That is true. But that's a peripheral vision problem that we gave him, so it probably doesn't count either.
He also had a problem with monogamy, so there was that as well.
That is not a disability. That's being a shithead.
So, yeah, that's no. So we got like half of a musketeer showing up to the table.
Yeah. And now we do our grab bag question. And Corinne, I have created a grab bag question today that I am very curious to know about you. And it is, how do you think you'd handle it if you were approached by seemingly friendly aliens?
I would be very polite to them and friendly towards them. And I would back away. What about you?
Then that answers my second part of the question, which is, and would you make out with them if they were hot?
Oh, you know what? Okay, you did not mention the hot part in the first section.
Does it make a difference?
Oh, hell yeah, it makes a difference. Are you kidding me?
Oh, it goes to show Earth girls are easy.
Yeah. Come on now.
Okay. Then rephrasing, how do you think you'd handle it if you were approached by seemingly hot, friendly aliens?
Oh, I'd be like, I will be your tour guide. I will show you around and I will show you my universe.
My universe, I mean, my vagina.
Yes. What about you, Tim?
Oh, I would be so nice to them. I would try to be their bestest friend, because if they were going to take over the earth, I would be like, you're keeping me, right? I'll be your pet. It's fine. I'll just be your little sidekick. I'll follow you around. I'll be your translator. I'll be whatever you need. I'll be your everything.
Oh, see, you're going to be like Val and go off in the spaceship.
No, I didn't say that. Oh. I'm staying on Earth. Oh, okay. If they were here and they wanted to stay here and they, you know, they needed somebody to show them around, then that would be me. I would love to meet somebody from out of this universe and hopefully be able to have a conversation with them and unlock the secrets.
No, that would be cool. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. I don't think I'd be like, ah, and then running away. I'd be like, hey, are you friendly? Are you going to zap me?
Yeah. Okay, Tamara, I have created a very special actual question for us for this recording.
Okay.
So when Ted was packing for his Vegas quickie marriage, mm-hmm. If you will recall, because you have peripheral vision, he was packing two different VHS tapes, one named Rita the Handmaiden and one named Fun in the Barnyard. I would like you to describe one of those videos.
Oh, God. I'm going to bypass Fun in the Barnyard because that just is leaning too much towards bestiality. The Handmaiden... It's going to be a beautiful buxom brunette with extremely large hands that goes around to a college dormitory pretending to clean it in a French maid's outfit with a feather duster, and instead is enticed by all the hunky college men that she just decides to give them hand jobs. Oh. Hence the name Handmaiden.
And she keeps her maiden head by only using her hands.
Yes, exactly.
Nice. Nice.
Thank you. My future in porn is up and coming. No, porn, not porn. Porn producing. I'm not going to be in porn. I scratch that. Let me rephrase that. Porn producer. I've got an imagination. I'm not afraid to use it.
Can't wait for those scripts that you write.
Uh-huh.
So, Tamara, what movie do we have coming up next week?
My next, this movie may make you say what the fuck, is Encino Man. Ooh. It's the only movie I ever watched twice in a row with my friend Dana when I was in middle school. Don't ask me why.
And I've never seen it, but I know that Brendan Fraser is in it. So it's bound to be profound, amazing, touching in ways that you never thought possible.
Yes, it was at peak Brendan Fraser hotness, but there's also Pauly Shore, who you have to tolerate in the movie. So there's that. It kind of hampers the Brendan Fraser element.
It just brings it down so that you're not like running at the screen being like, take me, Encino Man, take me now.
No wheezing the juice.
Oh, Pauly Shore. The only Pauly Shore movie I have seen is Son-in-Law, thanks to the Shepherd Middle School movie viewing program.
Oh my God, how? Wow. Oh. Thanks.
Yeah.
Public school education.
So if you have anything you'd like to say about Earth Girls Are Easy, Encino Man, Brendan Fraser, or Jeff Goldblum, winky winky, you can reach out to us via email at onedrykiss@gmail.com or through the social medias on Instagram, Twitter, X, and Facebook, all at One Dry Kiss.
I'm speaking Whiplock and Zeebo. And as always, if you can find the time to rate and review us, we'd greatly appreciate it. But in the meantime, we'd like to thank you for dropping by, and we bid you adieu with one
dry kiss.
See you next time.
See you next time. Yay!
Yay!
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm still going. Excuse me. Back at Val's house, I'm like, why aren't you reading? Because it's my turn.
Because it's not my turn.
He's going to want to just... Oh, my God. He's going to want to... I can't do it without... He's going to want to... I'm going to just have to cut it out. When we do, like, the season, they're, like, a little extra, like... moist. I cut out that beginning part so that people aren't like, oh, but
I feel so much better with all my,
the wettest G's in the West. He's going to want to dissect them or something. Yes, I got it. In Legally Blonde, there were different nationalities, and they had diversity of size during their dance scene. There was a gay hairstylist in that scene as well. And maybe, oh my God, now I'm just realizing that Legally Blonde cribbed this entire scene from fucking Earth Girls Are Easy. Oh my gosh, Tam! What the fuck? It all comes together! It's all connected!
Holy crap, Corinne's got her cork board out and her red strings going. Oh, Jesus Christ.
My brain hamster has pulled out the murder board and I'm not sure I'm ready for it. It's all my fault. And no, it's not recording for our podcast.
Oh, you say that again. It's what? It's what?
Not your fault.
Oh, no, that's not what you said.
It's my fault?
You see it like you said the first time.
It's my fault.
All your fault.
Oh, it's all my fault. Thank you for prompting me. I appreciate that. I needed help.
Those words never came out of your mouth in that order, so I just had to bask in it for a second.
Well, I'm happy to give you something to bask about.
Mm-hmm. Earth girls aren't easy.
Earth girls aren't easy. Oh my God.